got to make sure that the people at the top have an understanding about what's new and innovative, not what's easy and what we've done last year and the year before and the year before.
Welcome to Reality Check, a weekly podcast about anything and everything having to do with education. I'm Jeannie Allen, founder and CEO of the Center for Education Reform. We chose the name Reality Check because a lot of what you read about education these days is often wrong or misleading. If you want to know what's really going on in American education, from K through career, you're going to need a reality check. Hello again, this is Jeannie Allen. Welcome to another edition of Reality Check. Today we are covering the challenges of rural communities. While much of the nation seems focused on city issues, rural America represents an enormous and often forgotten part of our nation. And yet, rural communities are critical parts of America's heartland. In fact, it's more expansive than any other area in the country. I'm so pleased today to have two amazing leaders from Rural America, or Real America as I like to call it, if you will, to talk with me about their efforts to transform education opportunities and communities for students. Dr. Ben Chavis is an educator, school founder, and resident of Robeson County, North Carolina. He hails from the Lenape Indian tribe and has had firsthand experience from his community and his experience as a leader of one of the most successful charter schools in California, American Indian Charter School. We'll talk about that in a minute. I'm also pleased to have another good friend, the head of the Maxton, North Carolina City Council, James McDougald, is here with us. He could be doing just about anything, but he chose to come back to Maxton to help his community. Gentlemen, welcome.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Ben and James, thank you so much for being with me. So first, let's give our listeners here a little context. Ben, let me go ahead and start with you.
Lumberton, just to give your listeners an idea, Lumberton is along Interstate I-95, which is about the midway point. Let's see, if you're leaving New York City and you're headed to Miami, Lumberton is the midway point on Interstate 95. Traditionally, it was a lumber town, you know, when it was first founded in the 1790s. And been various things, but always really an agriculture community. Tobacco, historically, cotton, and now more so, you know, I tell people now, a lot of hay, tobacco no longer, but it's a rural poor community economically.
Okay, and so that people out there in the world don't think I'm entirely disrespectful, I said you're from the Lumbee Indian tribe and introducing you, not Native American, because every time I've spoke to you, you say Indian.
Right, yeah, I'm an Indian, American Indian.
Okay.
So you can call me whatever you wish. Just call me.
That's great. And James, Maxton is not too far from Lumberton. Tell our listeners kind of about Maxton.
Maxton is one of the small communities. There's about 15 communities in Robeson County. In the state of North Carolina, Robeson County is the largest county in the state, and Maxton has the largest geographical area within the county. We have been, as Ben said, just trying to make it go of things over the years with textiles moving out and farming going more technical. Didn't need a lot of hands to do that. And we're just struggling within the county. And that's what we call the poorness of the county. There's a lot of struggling there without any jobs.
Yeah, and I remember visiting you, and I visited both of you there for our listeners, and you'll learn a little bit more about why I would travel down to Robeson County in just a second. But you've got this amazing train depot, beautiful station, and no one stops there anymore, James.
No. Once upon a time, Maxton had a hospital, two banks, the train stopped there, three trains stopped there, taking on passengers, taking off cargo. It was really a booming city and had an airport, Lumberton-Maxton Airport, and it is still there, but the air base moves from there to Fayetteville, which so goes the military, so goes the people.
Right, and the jobs and everything. And Ben, you know, you and I have talked about this in the past. You know, there's that great book that J.D. Vance created several years ago, Hillbilly Elegy, about his upbringing in Kentucky and Ohio. And I think the world got riveted on that story, but tend to forget that there's still a lot of communities out there that are lacking in the business that they need to grow and thrive. Why is that?
Well, because everyone is interested in the larger towns. It's easier to bring money or get money in the larger towns because of that. And I sort of disagree with it, and I think Ben does as well, because there's so many things that can be offered in these small cities. People are moving down to Maxton and other parts of Robertson County because of the quaintness of it.
Ben, what do you think? Anything else out there that we should know about?
You know, I love Robeson County, North Carolina. I grew up here. Like James, both James and I left in 76, went off to college, and we were prepared, I think, speaking for James and myself, we were prepared with a good, sound academic education, and you know, you can always improve. We both went to major universities. James went to Wake Forest University, All-American. I went to University of Arizona. We were prepared to go off and get an education, but it was always my dream to come back home and live here. I love rural America. I live in San Francisco. I live in a major city. James lived in Winston-Salem. We're both business people. We believe that rural America, especially our communities, have a lot to offer, but in order to offer more, we need to improve our schools, and that's really what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids, James, myself, we grew up here. Why is it we were prepared to go off and be successful? And today, it's unbelievable today how bad it is. But we know the kids have the ability. It's not the kids. It's not the parents. It's not the families. We need better schools.
Right.
And I see charter schools as an alternative, to give us an alternative. I'm for charter schools, private schools, public schools, whatever works for our kids. But the system we have now is not working.
Yeah, and you wanted to come back there. You were fully prepared from Arizona to come back there and start building schools. But you went to California and started what became one of the most successful charter schools in California, the American Indian Charter School in Oakland, California. And you did some bold, crazy things. In fact, your book was called Crazy Like a Fox. If any of you are interested in reading a fantastic story, it's the story of Ben Chavis, Chavis with a C, C-H-A-V-I-S. And American Indian Charter School showed the people of Oakland that you could educate anyone. First of all, spend a couple minutes talking about what you discovered doing that, and then why weren't they just dying to have you back in North Carolina?
Well, what I've learned, and James and I have talked about this a lot, we were both high school athletes and collegiate athletes. And in order to be successful at anything, you need to work hard. You need to work hard. You need to have a good, solid foundation of dedication and work and preparedness. And it doesn't matter what you do. When I cropped tobacco as a young boy, I wanted to be the best at cropping tobacco. So I just practiced at it. And it's the same with school. When I went to Oakland, what I noticed is the kids, they didn't have any preparation in math, science, and reading. So what we did is we added more time. We added summer school. We just started practicing more. And my black kids, my Mexican kids, my Indian kids, they really performed well. And then when we performed well, the Chinese came to our school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting what people would say. People would say, well, that school performs well because of the Chinese. No, we performed well, and then the Chinese came, and then all of our kids performed. Our black students scored as high as our Chinese kids, our Indian kids. It doesn't really matter about race. It's about preparedness. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember in high school, James's team, they were the state champions that year in football. But those guys were prepared. They were really prepared to be the best. And I believe whether it's football, track, cross country, baseball, math, science, or running your Center for Educational Reform, the reason you're so good is because you're prepared. And I think that's what we want for our kids.
That's the key to education. And so you knew about the school, of course, James, and you sought to try to bring a school like this and are in the midst of trying to bring schools like this to Maxton. I'm wondering, like when Ben said, you know, people started coming to that school after it began to educate the least successful, then groups of students, like Asians that tend to be more successful, started coming to. Lots of people. It was very diverse. This happens everywhere in charter schools, of course. You don't initially read about that every day. We're trying to change that. But do you think if you build great schools in rural communities, James, people will come back?
I do. And one of the things that we're trying to do here in Maxton is make it a destination place. And what better destination you could have is a school that people can travel to and want to be there. People are traveling now to it. It started out as an alternative school for the, and I call them the knuckleheads. But now there's a line waiting, a waiting line for to get into this school. Because once they put discipline under control, learning starts. And that's what you have to have. You've got to prepare themselves, prepare the kids for these things. And what we've seen in Robinson County, there's no preparation. They're trying to prepare you for the test, and that's about it. But there's no thinking there. There's no thinking at all. And our kids are missing out on years and years of preparation, and they can't get it. They can't go back and get it again. It's got to be present now.
You know, a lot of people say that the part of the reason that counties like Robinson, which, by the way, I think it was of the 46 schools in Robinson County, more than half are failing, are actually rated F. Most of the rest are D's and C's. There's one or two A's and B's. It is the site of the first, quote-unquote, innovative school takeover by the state, partner with the charter management company, take over this little school in a part of the county. Not enough, by the way. But some people say, well, it's because we can't attract the best and the brightest educators. But you've got a lot of great educators that have the potential. But what I see is this issue is you don't have the ability to really, I mean, people aren't taking advantage of the thousands of ideas, training, access to digital content, all the stuff that's going on elsewhere that's personalizing learning. How do we change that, James?
Well, basically, you change it by changing the people at the top. I mean, the school board that we have there is, I saw something in the paper the other day that the director, or the chairman of the board, has been there 24 years, and his co-chair has been there 24 years. Now, just think about sports. If you had a team that's been losing for 24 years, do you think you would keep that coach on? I don't think so. I mean, we have got to change the process. And I go back to, you've got to get outside of the fishbowl to learn something new. 90% of those people have not been outside the fishbowl to immerse themselves in other training and education. Or you go to a seminar and you learn a little bit, but yet you come back to the same place and you do the same thing because that's what's easy and you know that. But what's hard about it is not realizing your population is not growing within that. And so it starts at the top. I mean, grassroots is a great thing to start when you're building something, but if you're there already, it's got to be at the top. You've got to make sure that the people at the top has an understanding about what's new and innovative, not what's easy and what we've done last year and the year before and the year before.
And do you guys both see, is this a sentiment? I mean, I could, of course, agree with you more, but is this a sentiment you think people at the bottom, if you will, and I don't mean bottom in a negative way, just the bottom of the food chain, the parents, the citizens, the kids, do they see it that way? Or, you know, some communities, I mean, this is some things that's come out in a lot of the books about rural America. People just don't think they can succeed. Or do you feel like people there know what success looks like? They're just not sure.
I truly don't think. I've been in the film industry for Fujifilm. And before I got in there, I realized the pictures that I was taking, I thought were great until I saw a good picture. And until these kids and parents understand what a good education is, when Johnny comes home and wants to read instead of watch television, when Susie don't want to go out on a date but do her homework because she enjoys it, learning is fun, but you've got to have people there that can show how to make it fun. It's so easy just to give them a sheet of paper and say, okay, you're going to pass anyway. Because guess where they're going? Nowhere. Mm-hmm. I ask the question most of the times when I'm speaking to teenagers. Think about what your parents are doing. Do you want to do what your parents are doing? If not, what are you doing to change that? And I promise you, every parent in Robinson County, to a certain degree, do not want their kids to work in the chicken and the hog farms. They want them to be the doctors, the lawyers, the policemen, the detectives, the FBI. They want them to be bigger than what they are. Because, again, the dollars are bigger.
Listeners out there, I just want to remind you, I am talking to James McDougall, the head of the city or town council, Maxton, North Carolina. Would that everyone out there in small rural communities like yours, and not so small, would think that way and be willing to act. James, you've come up to Washington, D.C. to talk to the U.S. Department of Agriculture about grant funds. You've chatted with Senator Tim Scott about opportunity zones. Ben, you've traveled all around the country looking to bring solutions back. These are the things we have to be doing, is getting out of our comfort zone, as you said, and bringing back these ideas and this energy. What is it going to take, Ben Chavis, to do that?
I believe, you know, first of all, as James said, you got to start at the top. We got our former assistant superintendent, Linda Emanuel, American Indian. She moved to get rid of textbooks in the public schools. She got rid of them. She moved to get rid of valedictorian and salutatorian. Now, she doesn't believe competition is good. She believes that when you have a valedictorian, it makes everyone else feel bad. Now, she's on the school board. She retired from the school system. Now she's on the school board. We're in trouble. We've had enough of this. What we need is people. We need people like James and I, who are younger than us. We need a new generation to come in, and we can help them. But we need people come in and say, our kids can compete with anybody. I believe our kids can compete with anyone if they have the right coaching. And that's where we're lacking. Our kids have not had the right coaching.
Well, you guys are both great examples of that. I mean, Ben, you talked about, you know, you went into the University of Arizona. You end up developing businesses. Then you decided to take time off from business and develop a school, which is like a business. James, Ben referred to your record before. You went to Wake Forest. You were All-American. You played for a year in the NFL. You're a business person. You both could be doing anything else but going back to good old Robeson County. You are models for those students, right, of what can happen. So, you know, if we believe that education can change a community and change a community can do exactly what you're talking about, revitalize it, James. Walk us through the steps. So we have to start new schools, it sounds like. You referred to that before, right?
Exactly. And one of the things that I feel passionate about, the military. I've not been in the military, but I've watched and I've heard and have seen what the military can do for you. It allows everyone from all over the country to look at themselves as one. We are the Marines. We are the Navy, the Air Force, the Army, and the Coast Guard. Uniforms. That cuts out all of the who has what. When you're in the military, everybody gets a haircut the same way. They wear the same thing. Nobody knows who's rich or poor.
Mm-hmm.
That starts one. Secondly, it's being respectful of each other. Achievement. You get achievement through rank in the military. If you do a good job, if you've got leadership qualities, you can be promoted. That's what needs to be done. Think about it. Every small child wants to be recognized. And why not doing it that way in the school system as well? Marching. You got to listen to march. If I say right face and you turn left, you're not listening. Those are the key things that help you in the classroom. You've got to listen. You've got to be a team, be a part of a team. And the thing that I look at, and I've asked my sons this, they're 36 and 34 years old, when they're in school, what do you want to be when you grow up? You've got to give them expectations. If they expect to be a lawyer, they're going to go to school and try to do what lawyers do, or try to at least learn more because of that occupation. If they want to be a policeman or a nurse or a doctor, they need to be called Nurse Susie and Officer Tommy. Give them that aspiration of what they're going to be. And when Nurse Susie is being teased by Officer Tommy, what do police do? They protect people. Are you protecting Nurse Susie? No. Now you've admonished him, but you gave him something to think about as well.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, the parents, they're going to be prouder than you can ever believe that their son graduated. He's a marshal. He's a major in his class. He's a sergeant in his class, or she's a sergeant. That's aspirations there. And one of the things that we're trying to do with the school once it gets to Maxton, we're gonna take care of the whole family. When Susie comes for her physical, we're gonna bring the whole family in for a physical. Not that we're gonna make everybody well there. And I have a dentist already that is committed to coming and doing dental exams,
mm-hmm,
as well. So we're going to take the whole family, because you got to feed the whole family. You just can't feed one child there. But when you teach Tommy how to make a military bed, he's going to go home and tear up all the beds and say, hey, this is the way it should be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's order. So what do you say to critics that, you know, would look at a Robeson County where you are, close to half of the people there, the families live below the poverty line. In many communities, it's a majority minority. And many of the households are headed by single mothers. And there's a lot of people out there saying it's just about money, Jeannie and Ben and James, and we can just fix it. What do you say to the critics who don't believe that you can educate students who are that severely disadvantaged, Ben?
May I comment on that?
Please.
Let me tell you. You just described my family. Single mother. When I was a kid. My dad was a drunk driver. Got killed. You know, my dad fit every negative stereotype that you could apply to an American Indian. I was born in total poverty. But that's no excuse. That poverty is the best motivator in the world. That's what I always say. Poverty is undefeated. 1964, America declared war on poverty. Poverty is undefeated. But what poverty does, and people don't realize, it motivates us who are poor to do better. James didn't grow up rich. I didn't grow up rich. We were poor kids working in tobacco fields. But you know what? I had a poor mama, poor grandparent, but boy, she had discipline. And she had expectations. I believe I would rather have the poor kids in the poor areas working than to have Bill Gates' kids. How would I motivate Bill Gates' kids? My coach, you know what my coach told me in college? I was being lazy. I remember it was on I'd gone out to a club on Thursday night, and it was Friday, and we were practicing, and I was going to be lazy. And I said, Coach, I'm not feeling too well today. He said, oh, I heard last night you were out at a club. He said, let me tell you something, boy. I'll send you back home to North Carolina with the rest of those drunk Indians on the reservation. I said, what? Now, my coach was black. That was a motivator. But today, people would be offended.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Coach, we don't live on a reservation. He said, if I say you live on a reservation, you live on a reservation. And I got his point. He was a poor black kid who made the 1964 Olympic teams, first black coach in America. But what he was doing, he wasn't insulting me. He was using that to remind me, this is where you came from. You don't want to go back. And he was right. I did not want to go back. And I did what he asked me to do. And today, when you joke with people or you bring up radio, you say it offends everything. Everything seems to offend people in America except for ignorance.
Well, and you speak from what you know, because you use some of those same tactics that you grew up with, that tough love on your kids in Oakland, and people came after you. And for my listeners of Reality Check, Ben Chavis turned around schools in Oakland, and the establishment didn't like him, and they tried to find fault with him, and they sued him, and they carried him through the courts for a dozen years, and he was recently vindicated. I'm so proud of him, because it turns out you can look to make things stick on anybody, but when it's not true, it's not true. And I was just so pleased that the court exonerated you from any charges suggesting that you were doing anything but educating kids well.
Well, that's what James and I want to do today. Now, we're attacked here. We are attacked here. You know, I'm an outsider because I lived away for 40 years. I was born and raised right here. Went to the public school. Our own people, James is African-American, I'm American-Indian, our own people attack us, but that's not going to stop us because we want what's good for kids. We want what we had. That's all we want. We want a good education. And I believe that the charter school movement is the way to do it.
Well, and the thing of it is, when you educate a populace, now that people want to come to where you are. I've said this before to people that talk about schools. If you had great schools in Robeson County, we would have great roads because money would be here enough to fix the roads. And to the point that Ben made, one of the coaches I had made this statement, I don't recruit middle-class kids. And I said, well, why not, coach? Think about it. The poor kid would do everything he can to get out of his situation. The rich kid would do everything he can to prove that it's not his mother or father's money. The middle-class kid, the glass is always half full, not half empty, half full. And I think even now in these situations, they're looking at a glass that's half full. I think that it's an illusion to them that it's half full, that they're moving in the right direction. But they're not. And I think our students today are brighter, smarter, but they aren't challenged. And that's the problem that we have. If you're not challenged, you're not going to make it. You know, the old guy told me years ago, you can raise the bar high enough and you'll struggle to get over it and you'll accomplish something, but you can leave it low enough and all you're going to do is trip over it. And that's what we're doing now, is tripping over it.
It's fantastic wisdom, I have to tell you, James McDougall and Ben Chavis. And one of the things you just said, James, is striking. We need to fix those schools or build new schools, and transportation will come, infrastructure will come, business will come. And yet that is not the philosophy of most state policymakers, national lawmakers. They want to throw the infrastructure money down and think that eventually that's going to fix these issues. You can have the most beautiful roads and bridges, but unless you've got the most beautiful education going on, you're simply not going to succeed. I can't thank you two enough for being with me today. This is another reminder of why we all, before we talk about rural communities and what's going on and how those communities are trying to succeed, without talking to people like James and Ben and actually going down there, we simply won't make progress. So thank you for sharing just a little bit about what's going on. I know that when we come back, hopefully maybe in 6 months, maybe a year, if I'm too ambitious, we'll be talking about how those schools change that community. So James McDougall, Ben Chavis, thank you again for being with me. You guys might be outside the bright lights of a big city, but you are the center of the bright lights illuminating the fight for quality education for disadvantaged communities and their kids, and not just Robeson and the Tar Heel State, but a model for the nation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jane.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Reality Check. You can subscribe to Reality Check at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn, and never miss an episode. Visit us online at edreform.com and follow CER on Twitter at edreform and me, Jeannie Allen. I look forward to exploring the world of education with you and another prominent guest next time. See you then.